Episode 100, David Barrett with Bradford Christian College.
Welcome to the Principles in Practice podcast. This is where we discuss biblical principles for life and learning. I'm your host, Heather Hall, and this is my co-host,
Brian Hall.
Hi, everyone. It's my delight to introduce you to David Barrett. He's the director of BWLC. He has a Bachelor's of Arts degree in mathematics and a Master's of Arts degree in Family Studies. He has worked in the educational field since 1985 as a homeschool father of seven and the leader of a local homeschool organization, the Montgomery Institute. From 1993 to 2022, David served as administrator and high school instructor at Covenant Academy, a private Christian school that joins with a home in the education of their children, applying biblical principles to every discipline. Currently, he also serves as the academic dean for Bradford Christian College and is a teaching elder at Well Springs Church. Our oldest daughter, Keltis, attended Bradford Christian College as she worked toward earning her Bachelor of Arts degree in Christian Education, and our family has had the blessing of meeting David in person a few years back at his Rocky Mountain Biblical Worldview Conference. Welcome to our show, David.
Well, thank you. It's a delight to be here, and it's been a joy to get to know at least Keltis and you and your husband and your family, and I really appreciate the work that you are doing.
Well, thank you so much. So tell us about your homeschool journey and how you expanded beyond that into the educational sphere at large.
Okay, well, it's quite a story, and hopefully we can make it concise enough and clear enough. Basically, in 1985, had fallen under conviction to homeschool. And in 1985, we were going to be receiving our first child, our first birth. And my wife and I came to agreement pretty clearly that we wanted to homeschool our children. And right at that same time, in fact, that same year, we came across an individual named Samuel Blumenfeld. I don't know that if you're familiar with him or his work, but he is most noted for his book, Alpha Phonics, for teaching phonics and education. But he was also quite an advocate for homeschooling. And his publisher was actually here in Boise, and he happened to be speaking here. And my brother, who through a different route was getting quite interested in education, joined me, and we went to hear Samuel Blumenfeld. He also is quite an expert on the history of public education. He's written Is Public Education Necessary, which covers from colonial period up to about the year, oh, I don't know, into the later 1800s. And then he wrote NEA Trojan Horse in Education, which covered the latter years of public education. And we were excited about what he was presenting on the history of education, on the detriment of the public school system. And it was just so encouraging. And so we saw a flyer and he was going to be speaking up in Seattle. So we skedaddled to Seattle. And there we not only heard him and other speakers, it was more of a Christian worldview type conference, but we picked up a brochure that said that James Rose was speaking in Portland. We had come across the concept of the principal approach through the Red Books. Prior to that, my wife and I had developed quite a love for America's Christian history that was fostered by The Light and the Glory by Peter Marshall and David Manuel. Mm-hmm. And so I did my graduate work at the University of Connecticut. I chose that college primarily for the reason to explore New England and explore our Christian history. So we went later that summer to Portland and sat under the teaching of James Rose of the American Christian History Institute. And that's where we were most directly taught about the principal approach. So we came back and said, we're going to teach families about our Christian history. We're going to teach them about the principal approach. We hadn't even taught our own child. She was just born.
You're prepping up.
But we said, we're going to help families know about this. And so I had, Verna Hall was so gracious in talking with me. I was nobody out of nowhere, calling up the foundation down in San Francisco. And she said, yeah, we'll ship you books and you can just have them on consignment. And when you sell something, pay us for it. And I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. And so she worked with us. And we got the Red books. We picked up through another publisher the original McGuffey readers and got some math and different things that we thought were reflective of our historic education, so raise arithmetic and so forth. And we put on our first presentation and said, we're here to help. At that time in the mid to late, 85, 86, 87, homeschoolers were under quite an attack in Idaho, primarily because of a rogue judge in a county not far from Boise. But of course, other school districts were getting more aggressive concerning home education. Why aren't they in the schools? Truancy officers, tracking down kids that didn't show up, or why were they not in the schoolroom and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so it was because of that that we formed the Montgomery Institute. Mm-hmm. The Montgomery Institute was formed as a private enterprise school. It provided an umbrella protection for homeschoolers such that if they were contacted by a school district official or whatever, they could inform them, my child is enrolled in a private school. Mm-hmm. It's the Montgomery Institute. Here's their phone number, which was my number. So I got to receive the calls. This child says they're in your school, but you're in Boise and they live in Nampa. And how could this even be happening? They live even further away than that. And so I would be a buffer. Our organization be a buffer for them. And we would challenge the school district with the fact that one, they are the public school, we are a private school, they have a responsibility to see to the education of public students. We have a responsibility to see to the education of the private students in our school. Mm-hmm. And I would say, things like, if you think you need to see our curriculum, what you need to first do is show me in the Idaho Code where you have the authority to exercise that over our curriculum. Mm. And I did different things like this, and we never did go to court. I actually got called by an attorney representing a school district once, and he still didn't take us to court, though I have been in court twice as witness for some homeschooled families during that time. So we provided that buffer, and eventually homeschool fathers got in the legislature and changed the vague wording to a more precise wording. And Idaho, as a whole, has been one of the most freest states to home educate. Mm-hmm. But through the Montgomery Institute, holding monthly meetings and putting on our conference, which is still going but was under a different name at that time, we provided training and education for the families. Our primary responsibility was to train the parents to educate their children, but we provided, as time went on, when I was promoting, we need to do Latin, we need to do logic, some of the families would say, well, aren't you teaching your kids that? And I would say, yes. And they say, could we join you? So, you start getting a little group of kids in my living room, and that became the seedbed for Covenant Academy. And so eventually my kids would feed out of the home into the academy. And so all my children graduated from Covenant Academy. We provided a full curriculum all the way through 12th grade, but many of our students were actually homeschoolers that were picking and choosing part-time classes to fill in for things they weren't comfortable teaching at home. But if they did do a full program through my school, I'd issue a diploma and so forth from Covenant Academy. And we've had students that went to Liberty University and Hillsdale and Laterno and some places like that, as well as just the local college. And they did really, really well. In the most recent years, due to some changes in my life and all my kids grown up and out of the home and all that kind of thing, and because of some moves I need to make, I've let Covenant Academy kind of come to an end. I still put on my conference, but have stepped on into the college level and started Bradford Christian College to hopefully train up a new generation of individuals with a real biblical concept towards education that brings in what we learned under the principal approach and the application of biblical principles really to each and every discipline and really every area of life. We're not limiting ourselves just to education.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is it that you would say makes Bradford Christian College distinct from other Christian colleges that make a similar claim, or the wording on their website might sound like their student will get the same kind of education that you offer?
Right. Yeah. A lot of colleges will say they offer a biblical worldview or their educations within context of biblical worldview. And I wouldn't doubt that that is actually to various degrees being done. But what would make us distinctive is, as it says on our website, and people can go just to bradfordchristiancollege.com to see the homepage, it says a biblical principle approach college. And so what we've done or endeavoring to do, and I think we're doing a pretty good job at it, is to take what we've understood in terms of what are fundamental biblical principles and made them active and alive in each of the disciplines such that it guarantees biblical reasoning taking place and not just, okay, well, from my upbringing or what I've heard in Christianity, this is how I should think about something, but how does what I am learning express, reflect, or maybe the biblical principle shows that it contradicts biblical truth? So we're hoping to be laying out a framework that is more, I guess, evident in what we as Christians ought to be reasoning from. And I think that, you know, the principal approach was designed to make that its goal, just as, you know, Rosalie Slater wrote in her Teaching and Learning book, which is the foundational text for the principal approach, that it's America's historic Christian method of biblical reasoning that makes the truths of God's word the basis of every subject in the school curriculum. Well, if that's going to be our goal, then we need to know how does the Bible speak to this or that discipline. And principles, if we get them down to their root basis, they can apply across the board. A principle is a fundamental truth that is applicable throughout, you know, whether it be the criteria you're looking at is time, it will always be true through time, or location, it will be true here, just as it's true, you know, in another part of the world. Or in subject matter, it's a truth in an academic discipline, it's a truth in a, you know, family or marriage relationship, it's a truth in the business world. It ought to be able to be seen there. And so we're endeavoring to make that happen and be seen.
So you're helping to prepare them for life, because it's going to affect them all their life, the way they learn and reason.
Right. And I think, you know, the idea of that is what education is to be, you know, education, when you look at Webster's definition, it talks about the internal and the external. It talks about the whole thing, you know, the pouring in of truth, as well as the forming of the manners, and to do what? To equip them, you know, for their future station in life.
Yep.
Education should be doing that. And in reality, though, the humanist education, the public schools, is often spoken of even by them as, well, this is just a part of life. They are forming a way of life, you know, and a philosophy of life. One of the things that I left out of my quick history of our education as a family and an individual is why we called our first organization the Montgomery Institute. That was named Montgomery Institute because of an individual named Zachariah Montgomery that we came across. Actually, we found his book up at the Seattle seminar that we went to, the second one following Blumenfeld here. And it was just a little white book that was just sitting there, and my brother bought it, and we read it all the way back to Boise. And what it is Zachariah Montgomery, who wrote this book in 1886, demonstrated statistically that the public education system at that time, you know, we think, oh, 1963 or whatever, when prayer was taken out of schools or the Bible, that's when things fell apart. Well, he demonstrated that by that time period, 1880s, that the public education was an anti-parental crime-producing system. And he showed it through statistical research comparing New England, particularly Massachusetts, with Virginia, one having been the seedbed of public school, Horace Mann and all that, in the 1830s in Massachusetts, and Virginia, which the South tended to resist the public school movement and stayed with, you know, the local common school more, and the nanny school, which was just a mom that says, I will teach your child to read, the minister being the instructor and so forth. There was dramatic statistical difference in crime rates, suicide rates, insanity rates between what was accelerating in Massachusetts as opposed to no such great changes in Virginia. So even in the 1880s, Zachariah Montgomery had come to this conclusion, and he even demonstrated how in California, they had already passed legislation in the 1880s that the Bible could only be read as a literature without any commentary upon it, that a teacher was free to criticize a parent in front of the student, but if a parent criticizes the teacher in front of the student, they actually could sue. So, you know, what we had as a blossoming and actually a producing fruit here, you know, in the 60s and 70s and 80s, the seed was planted long before.
For some of those that collect books, what was the name of that book?
Well, the name of the book is an odd name. It's called Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. And the reason it's named that is because Zachariah Montgomery was up for nomination as an attorney general for the United States. And he had to be confirmed by the Senate, but he was well known for his position on the public school system. And there were, as he would say, drops of poison going around in the Senate trying to, you know, discredit him and so forth. I researched him out quite a bit, and there were papers across the country talking about it was quite a, you know, for back then without TV, radio, and whatever, quite a national thing about his appointment. He was attacked rather vigorously. And I remember one headline out of the Sacramento Bee. He was from California, and the headline read, "Zach on the rack," basically because of, you know, the attack in the Senate upon him during this confirmation time period. It's interesting, not only is it called Poison Drops in the, it doesn't say just Senate, it says the Federal Senate. He understood the dual nature of our government. He understood that we were a federal republic. Senate, its intent was to represent the states, which really is rooted in biblical thought in terms of the vertical and horizontal nature of the way God works with mankind, as well as how he worked out even the government of Israel, particularly under the judges. And it was more of a federal confederation. And these ideas were taught by the Puritan theologians and ministers in America's history. And this is that historic biblical reasoning that even Rosalie Slater was referring to. It was a natural process of the reasoning of the times, such that when it came time to set up a government here in our country, it was a natural outworking that it would be of a federal nature. There would be a recognition of local self-government on every level, and the national government limited to certain jurisdictions that were not able to be taken care of well by individual states for the purposes of national things like trade agreements and so forth were on the national level. And we, of course, have lost much of that understanding of our way of our government, our constitution. So, I mean, there's all these areas in which biblical thought affected America. And when we forget our history, another thing out of the Red Books, I think it's in Rosalie Slater's, might be in the first part of Vernon Hall's Christian History of the Constitution, is, you know, when we forget our history, we forget who we are. We're like a ship without a rudder, and we'll just go wherever the strongest wind is blowing. And our nation has pretty much gone down that road. That's why, for example, our conference now, which is called the Rocky Mountain Biblical Worldview Conference, its original name, by the way, back in the 1980s, because of what we were dealing with here in Idaho, it was called the Freedom in Education Rally and Workshop is what our first name was. A terrible name, but it spoke to where we were at. You know, we were fighting for the freedom to educate. But anyway, our conference coming up this April, April 26 and 27, we're going to have John Eidsmo here. And he's a constitutional attorney from Montgomery, Alabama, who is the senior counsel and resident advisor for the Foundation for Moral Law down in Alabama. It's an advocacy legal group, kind of like, you know, you might have heard of ACLJ. Okay, that's the most noted one, and biggest ACLJ. They write briefs for cases that deal with individual liberty and freedom. Well, he's going to be here speaking on an institute on the Constitution. We're going to be focusing on the Constitution, and certainly we'll be highlighting biblical roots of it, as well as biblical examples expressed through it.
Well, I really love the history behind the name of the Montgomery Institute. And is that still operating since you don't have the same needs in Idaho right now?
No, my attentions have been pulled primarily now in the two areas as a teaching elder of Wellsprings Church. I still provide individual consultation, particularly for the families in our church. And I help them select curriculum and so forth. And yeah, the protective need isn't there. And so I do it more on an individual basis and through our church. And then Bradford is becoming more and more consuming of time in curriculum development and mentoring of students. And so that's my two main education focuses now.
Okay. And then with potential students for Bradford Christian College, what kind of an education do you require them to have? Do you prefer that they have a background in the principal approach, or do they It's not required. Yeah. So do they then get like 101 classes, or do they get immersed in the principal approach right away?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not required. We're not thinking that somebody is going to necessarily have that. So we have foundational classes, both for the Christian education part of it and biblical thought and so forth, as well as in the principal approach. And for one of the very first classes they will take is on the biblical life principles. And they will be taught about the history of the principal approach, how we came to this position of emphasis, and they will be required to do some fundamental 4R-ing research of each of the principles, so that they have at least a solid introductory basis of the biblical principles of how to do research and do reasoning as well. I mean, it'd be a great advantage, just as Celtus had in coming into the program, to have had, you know, the principal approach background, but it's not required. And that's where the mentoring comes along as well, as people have areas in which they need encouragement through our regular mentor meetings. I'm able to discuss these things with them and help give them direction as they work their way through.
And are those mentor meetings one-on-one, or are you meeting with your class as a whole?
They're one-on-one.
Okay.
Yeah.
For those who don't know yet, are the Bradford Christian College is still online-based learning, right?
Yeah, it's a distance learning mentor directed.
Okay, and the lectures are pre-recorded, is that right? It's a self-paced program, or?
All the lectures will be pre-recorded, and they're, you know, I do introductory lectures to all the courses, and then through the course, some of them will have other lectures by me or by others. For example, in the one of the courses under our Bachelor of Arts in Christian Leadership, the students involved in there are wanting an emphasis on government. And so in their History and Development of the Constitution course, they actually are having lectures done by John Eidsmoe himself. And so they, you know, they get quality other very specialized individuals to give lectures from as well. And so in the Bradford Christian College program, it is important that the student be self-initiated, in the sense it's not like they're going to go and sit in a class and be live instructed by one of our, you know, myself or someone else. In that way, it probably fits an individual who's come up through a homeschool program would probably feel more comfortable in there than someone that came out of a public school or private school classroom. But I think that the benefits of it would be great no matter what your background of mode of learning has been. And there's enough personal involvement, both the required regular mentor meetings, plus I can be called upon if, you know, if they've got questions, either by email or by setting up another appointment for a face-to-face can happen as well. And so, you know, they're not left, you know, floundering. Because we are under the umbrella of Logos University out of Florida, we do need to set up and function a 15-week semester. And so it is not self-paced in the sense that, you know, you can take however long to get this particular course done. It is under a regular semester 15-week program, or in the summer, it might get set up for like a 12-week program. So they are attending school. And that's an important thing for the students to realize, where you would take, say, 15 credit hours at a campus college, you'd be expected to have, you know, 15 hours in class and plus whatever time for homework. Well, taking 15 credit hours from us will involve your class time being research, reading, or viewing lectures and then completing assignments, or you're out of class time. And so that's how, you know, that's kind of a picture of how that works.
Okay. And then some people might wonder if BCC is accredited.
Under Logos University, it's an accredited program. Yes.
Okay. And then how do you handle the graduation? Do you have a ceremony that you do for students? Or
at this time, we haven't had a formal ceremony. It may be that we will end up doing that. But at this point, you know, when they complete it, you know, we recognize them, and they'll receive their diploma. And it will have Logos University, Bradford Christian College, have both names on it.
Okay. And then do you offer dual credit for homeschool high school students, or do you offer adult degree programs by chance?
Well, that's a good question. And I'm the academic dean and not the one in charge of the whole college. So my brother probably have to answer that. At this point, I have not come across a situation where we've had to address that. And we've had some talk about doing like little modules for just adult education, but we haven't. At this point, I'm paddling pretty fast to stay up on the fact that we have 5 degrees now going.
Yeah.
That involves quite a, you know, everything involves curriculum development on each one. And so that has not been something we've stepped into yet.
Yeah. Well, just, you're growing fast, and then it's good that you're growing. So maybe eventually you'll get to where you can offer either of those.
Yeah. Being the way the format of the program is, once the curriculum is developed, I'm not having to go into every class and teach that class, but I am having to, or in the future, we'll have others assigned being mentors and graders. And so at that point, it may be possible to, you know, do like a 3-week adult education type program or something like that down the road.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how has the principal approach personally impacted you?
Well, for me, as we went through our learning time, I told about going up, Sam Blumenfeld was not necessarily a principal approach individual. He was just awakening us to the detriment of the public school, the necessity of teaching by phonics base. And he even wrote in the areas of arithmetic and penmanship. And I can see principal approach concepts there, because one of the fundamentals of the principal approach is the academic rudiments. You not only have the biblical principles, but you've got the principles of the academic study. And there are fundamentals that are true academically from the very beginning that govern how you develop that discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he was talking about, you know, the primary strokes for penmanship, about the letters and phonics, you know, sound letter representation for reading and so forth. And we're like, wow, okay. Well, then when we went to Jim Rose, what I learned from Jim Rose primarily was to really respect and understand our Christian history and the biblical learning that was there, and you know, biblical thought, you know. And to me, Christianity, I think my brother described it best. As you grew up, you went to church, and then you went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And at church, you learned about the Bible and the history of the Bible and things in the Bible. And at school, you learned real history. And it was like, you know, the things in the Bible didn't connect with what you learned at the school. And so I had come to a point where I understood a lot more about biblical and our Christian history and beginning to understand biblical application. But I guess with Jim Rose, I grew in my love and respect of America's Christian history. And then following Jim Rose, the third person, the three people that are most impactful were Sam Blumenfeld, Jim Rose, and then Paul Jaley. Paul Daly is a pastor and principal from Plymouth, Massachusetts. He's now director of the Plymouth Rock Foundation as well. He came out, and what he did is he kind of blew the big picture up for us of what it means that God is sovereign in your life and the Bible is true. And so for me, what it has done is made the Bible, both Old and New Testament, relevant to life. Before, it was relevant to being a Christian. Somehow that didn't transfer over to life as a whole. I mean, I knew I should not do this and I should act this way and so forth, but to make it relevant to all of my life. And it made God big, you know, and real, and the one to whom I'm accountable, and, you know, and he's given me a word to live by. And so it, I ultimately became, you know, your way of life, as opposed to a part of your life.
It makes you learn how to become an effective Christian in the culture.
Sure. Yeah.
As well. Yeah.
Because now you feel like you have ways of reasoning out answers to what is going on in the world. And one reason we kind of altered our conference to be a biblical worldview conference, though now that's kind of a, you know, just a buzzword in the community. But at the time, it meant a lot to us to name it that, because we realized that, you know, the secular humanist is working from a worldview. You know, they've got a basis of authority in their life that they're drawing upon. We as Christians, we have a basis of authority too that we're drawing upon. Everybody's got their ultimate source of, you might say, knowledge that they're drawing upon. And we have just as much right to argue, you know, revelational knowledge. It's our basis for why we stand. And in fact, our founding fathers did. You know, the Bible was the most quoted source of authority in the political documents of our nation. And they're going to be standing on their humanistic source, which is usually someone else, another authority, or themselves. You know, their body of wisdom is them. And how we as Christians need to come to the point of real, you know, really asserting the understanding and acting on it that we're talking about man's mind against God's mind. We're standing on God's mind, and we have every right to assert that truth against their mind. And they can laugh at the fact that, oh, well, you're just quoting the Bible, and we can say, well, you're just quoting what you thought up in your own head. I mean, that's the truth.
But we
shy away from the fact that, oh no, they know my authority is the Bible, and now that looks bad. No, what looks bad is we're just going with the whim of men if we follow you.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Okay, so what are some of your favorite subjects to teach and why?
Oh my goodness. Well, obviously history is very fun to teach because it so evidently shows the hand of God. And when you place it up against the chain of Christianity, or, you know, the line of liberty in terms of the prominent acts of God in history, you can see God working and how God has worked in it. Helps you realize the whole cause and effect of, I mean, it was, I remember how excited I was way back when we're celebrating, you know, the 500th anniversary of Columbus, right? 1992. And all of a sudden coming out in English in its fullness for the first time is Columbus's Book of Prophecies, is what it's called. It's not him prophesying, it's him collecting prophecies in scripture that he felt were relevant to his life and why he was doing what he was doing. You know, I thought for the most of my life, Columbus was just an explorer and wanted to make himself rich, right? But I had been introduced in a very small way through the light and the glory, the fact that there was this writing by Columbus and that he expressed how much he believed he was being used by the hand of God for what he was doing. And so now in 92, they actually published his Book of Prophecies, which he never wrote for publication. So some people criticize it as a scattered thing of writings. Well, he's just writing his thoughts down. You know, you could liken it to maybe your personal journal. If somebody just picked up your journal and one day you're writing this and another day you're writing that, they would say it was a scattered writing. You would probably want to edit it if you're going to publish it. So anyway, Things like that, to realize, you know, here's Columbus acting out of a true desire to glorify God in this or that way, to take to the nations the light of Christ, believing he was even named Christ bearer for that purpose, Christopher meaning that. You know, that just brings out a reality that God is real and acting. So obviously history. My undergraduate major is in mathematics, so I've always loved mathematics. There's exciting things about it that I don't know why I just love numbers and working with them, but there's ways in which it can be a basis on which biblical truth can be demonstrated to the student. One of my favorite illustrations is just a simple thing about adding fractions. You know, you're adding one half and one third. They must stay separate until they have a common foundation on which they can come together, right? So you change them to sixth, and now each has been converted to have a basis on which they are able to join. I mean, it's a whole lesson on the concept of covenant, on the concept of joining and separating things that don't have a sure foundation, just like you in your life. If you're talking to young children, you can just illustrate that, we're learning how to and why these fractions can come together. But let's just take a moment and think about the fact that they were separate before this, and they were separate for a reason. They didn't have a common basis on which they could come together. And, just like your parents might say, no, you're not going to be able to play with so-and-so over there. And you say, well, why can't I play with them? And say, well, some things that their family does or encourages just isn't what our family wants to encourage. But then maybe over time, something happens, something changes, and that family becomes friends with your family, and they see values that your family has, and they change to where they're more similar. And finally, you find out that your mom says, yeah, you can spend time playing with so-and-so. What's the difference? There was a common basis. Here, we're just working with numbers, but we're following a biblical truth on which, yes, there's got to be a sufficient basis before we covenant, even on the basis of friendship with others. Or we say, no, we've got to keep these two apart. So when I learned, you know, little things like that, it was like, wow, mathematics could teach life. This is exciting. So, but I've always liked mathematics. Having taught every subject, I don't know that there would be one that I'd say that I don't like. But those would be two that I do, for sure.
Well, thanks for that example. I really loved hearing how you took that and applied it to the biblical truth, to an application in everyday life. I think that's a great example to give our listeners.
Yeah, I think it's important that we see that if these truths are real biblical truths, they ought to be able to be seen, illustrated, or demonstrated to counter what's being taught in whatever we're working with.
So do you have any resources you would highly recommend to our listeners to look into?
Well, they could take classes at Bradford. They'll get a lot of stuff. But the most impactful, if we're talking about education, for me, would be reading out of Paul Jaley's Go Ye Therefore and Teach. It's, I don't know if it's in print, so it's really hard to get. But that is his collection in well-ordered fashion, the philosophy behind his principal approach school, as well as the understanding of the disciplines from a biblical perspective. I think that the foundation puts out a lot of good stuff curriculum-wise that can be drawn upon as one's learning. I think it's important that you do, you know, some of your own research so that these things are yours. And so just learning how to research a discipline by keywords and seeking them out in the scriptures and out in Webster's dictionary builds a basis of understanding. I would really eventually like to published a little self-study on the biblical principle approach that I put together for our introductory course. And so I'm working with my brother on potentially maybe putting it in a way that it could be utilized outside of Bradford. So maybe this summer we'll get that organized.
Yeah, keep us up to date on that so that we can help promote it.
Yeah, I will let you know if we get something put together in more of a published fashion.
Okay, so as we come to a close, what advice or words of encouragement do you have for homeschooling parents, particularly for the fathers?
Okay, well, I think that, first of all, homeschooling is the best, okay? I think that one of the greatest joys in, let's start even with a mother, in a mother's life is sitting down and actually being the instrument by which your child learns to speak correctly, learns to read, discovers God's word. You know, the home should be the first school, the first church, and the first government. It should, in there, all those aspects should be taught. And it was that kind of a home that laid the basis for even what became here in America. I remember a story of my older brother, who I was all into homeschooling and all that, but they lived over in Portland, he and his wife, and he was kind of, you know, hesitant about it. You know, can we really teach our own children this, that, and the other? Well, his wife was very wise. She said, well, could I just get a little reading program and start working, you know, kindergarten level with my child? And, oh, sure, sure. Well, as what she ended up doing is when he would come home from work, my brother, she would say, here, look at what he's been looking at. And so he'd take the book and his son would come and sit with him and he would start actually teaching his child to read, just looking over what they had been doing before. And before he knew it, he had just taught his child to read. And he thought, wow, well, we could do this. Maybe we could do more. And it was a way of just getting him involved as he came home. And I think as we talk about fathers who often are out of the home, that they and even speaking to the wives, should look for ways to actually naturally incorporate them into what is going on in the home. One of the things that I highly encouraged our families in the Montgomery Institute to do was not only simple things like, you know, making sure they have one or two things to show dad when he comes home, this is what we've done today, but maybe even work on a little more formal presentation, say weekly, or, you know, Friday evening is we get to present to dad something that is significant that we learned this week. And so each child gets to present to the father, maybe memory of a Bible verse and how it applied or what they did in their science course or class. And this keeps dad engaged and really will help him even look forward to. And it also ends up being relationship building within there. And if there's any possibility that the dad could teach a particular subject, I mean, things that they do, if they're working on the car, if they're doing the garden, these can actually be part of the schooling. One of the things that we mentioned earlier in this program, but we need to emphasize is the fact that education is about life. It's not just about academics. It's not just about knowledge. And life involves application and doing and mentoring. And this is really what fathers can do for their children.
That's great advice and encouragement. Thank you for that.
Sure thing.
Well, David, thank you so much for your contributions in education. I know that we appreciate so much the opportunity for our daughter to have learned from you and been mentored by you. And we really value what you're doing out in Idaho and hope to see you again before too long.
Okay, well, thank you for that. And if I haven't mentioned it, I should tell you that I could quickly see that Keltis had been well-educated before she even came under our education here at Bradford. And so I just wanted to commend you and your husband for that part that you have done in her life. You did well in preparing her.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
As always, if you're looking for additional resources or support, you can visit our website at principalacademy.com, check out our shop and our blog, and you can also find us on Facebook at Christian Homeschooling with Bible Principles, also on Instagram under Principal Academy. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Well, this is Heather Hall.
And this is Brian Hall.
For Christ and His glory.